File. Thank you, Rhys acknowledged, taking a quick scan of its contents. Sir, ma'am, both patients were moved from Kindred Hospital to separate tents this morning. I do have some unfortunate news. Izzad Turan is dead. Chapter 47. Rhys and Haley entered a small tent connected to a larger chemical biological protective shelter through a self-sealing door. Part of an Army procurement program based on the requirement to treat U.S. troops infected after a chemical or biological attack overseas, the Smiths Detection CBPS Model 8E1 was designated the M8A4. Adapting to emerging threats, the program was later effectively diverted to National Guard units for use in the event of a chem bioweapon attack on the homeland. Attached to a tan, six-wheeled behemoth with a red cross painted on the side to identify it as a medical vehicle entitled to protections under the Geneva Conventions, the mobile, self-contained protection system was designed to provide a contamination-free working environment. The black laminated sign on its side did not go unnoticed by either of them. Inside the first tent was a large clear plastic and stainless steel box with dual airtight locking doors. "Let's hope this works," Haley said through her mask. "What is it?" Rhys asked. "It's a mobile level 4 biocontainment module." "That sounds serious." "These CBRN hazmat suits don't provide the requisite level of protection for what we will be dealing with in there."
"They're good enough for the military guys, but not for us?" Rhys asked.
"Typical." "If this was a respiratory spread pathogen, which it's not, and as long as they are not directly interacting with infected patients, those mil-spec hazmat suits would work and do what they are designed for, namely protecting soldiers from anthrax, mustard gas, and sarin. They are not designed to provide protection from a level 4 pathogen, and there simply aren't enough self-contained level 4 suits to outfit everyone in the military. That's why the military is on the outside and not interacting with anyone inside the containment area. You ready to get naked?"
"Naked?
Just follow my lead. This first module is positively pressurized. We'll change out of this CBRN equipment and into fully self-supportive biocontainment suits with their own oxygen supply before moving into the CBPS.
The what?"
"The Chemical Biological Protective Shelter. It's negatively pressurized."
"Why is that?" Rhys asks.
"In this case, it's to keep the virus inside. Just do what I do if you want to live."
When they emerged, Rhys thought they resembled astronauts. Each of them wore a small canister of oxygen on their back to pressurize the suit and allow them to breathe. Large, clear plastic face shields were incorporated into the PPE, and they were fitted with microphones for external communication. They passed under UV lights and pushed aside the heavy plastic flaps and fitted door to enter the negatively pressurized CBPS. In contrast to the desert tan exterior, the inside was stark white. It was constructed to eliminate the need for protective clothing. In contrast to the original intent, it was now being used to contain the virus itself. So anyone entering the space was required to be in full level 4 PPE. The 400 square feet of usable treatment space held only one patient. Cots lined the interior, cots that Rhys knew would soon hold more expectant bodies after Sharam Pahlavi was zipped into a body bag and moved to a refrigerated semi-truck. A guard in a level 4 suit stood watch and exited when the pair entered, as he had been instructed. "Stay behind me," Rhys ordered, more out of habit than out of any concern that their target would attempt to attack them or escape. Pahlavi was on a wheeled gurney behind another plastic covering that reminded Rhys of cheap shower curtains. Rhys stood outside with Dr. Garrett and took stock of the patient. An intravenous morphine drip was connected to a vein on his hand, and an electronic vital sign monitor beeped away atop a portable stand. It was evident that Sharam Pahlavi was going to die. Blood had dripped from his nose and over his mouth, mixing with the yellow vomit that had accumulated on his chin and chest. His eyes were closed, but his body shook as it used what little reserves of energy it had left to fight the fever that ravaged his body and brain. He had been covered with a blanket. As Reese and Haley watched through the opaque plastic, it slipped to the floor, exposing arms and hands purple with internal hemorrhaging. He was sweating blood. Reese was not a trained interrogator. In fact, on his list of skills, interrogation was ranked at the bottom. He'd attended an interrogation school in the SEAL teams, and his takeaway had been that he should leave tactical questioning to the professionals. It wasn't until his assignment to a CIA covert action program that he had been introduced to the darker arts of what they called enhanced interrogation, lessons he'd applied after his family had been violently taken from him. Reese shook off the memory. Those lessons in interrogation and torture were not going to work on a man about to touch the face of God. Even with Dr. Garrett's assurances, Reese was hesitant to engage. What if she's wrong? Too late. This guy is somehow connected to the virus and to the attack on Katie. Do it. Reese nodded at Haley and then entered the domain of the virus. Reese kicked the gurney.
Sharam.
He kicked it again. Sharam, he said louder to overcome the slight muffle of the microphone built into his suit. Sharam's eyes fluttered open and Reese fought back the urge to recoil. The eyes had sunk into their sockets, the skin around them purple with broken capillaries, his entire body hemorrhaging from within as the virus liquefied organs in its quest to find a new host. The pathogen had its own mission, to live. Sharam closed his eyes again, his breathing shallow.
My name is Sebastian,
he whispered.
Your name is Sharam Pahlavi. Your parents are from Iran. You are a terrorist and you are about to die,
Reese said without the slightest hint of sympathy.
Shahada,
the figure said, appearing more like a zombie than a man.
There is no God but Allah. I want you to listen to me closely, Sharam,
Reese continued.
You do not have much time. That means you are going to have to think clearly.
Reese stepped toward the machine monitoring vitals and controlling the morphine and sedative on a timed release with intravenous fluids. He turned both machines off.
Cremation is forbidden in Islam, Sharam. You know that. Those who are cremated go to hell. That's what I am going to ensure happens, not just to you, but to your mother and father after I kill them. Take solace in the fact that you will see them again soon. Not in paradise, but in the fires of Jahannam.
Reese could sense Haley staring at him through her gas mask. He took a knee, bringing his face closer to that of his subject.
Your body will not be washed in accordance with your faith, nor will it go to a mosque for Salat al-Janazah. It's going to be packed in a refrigerated box truck, along with hundreds of dead infidels, infidels that you helped kill. You will be stacked between other bodies for days, maybe months, until you are incinerated.
With startling speed, Sharam spit a bloody chunk of bile into his interrogator's face. The frothy red liquid hit Reese's face shield, slowly sliding down onto his suit. Reese resisted the urge to pull back, aware he could not afford to give his target a psychological edge.
Trust the suit, Reese.
Reese slowly rose to his feet. He opened a manila folder and held up a photo. It was a beige home built against a red rock hill with a cactus dominating a small rock garden.
Your parents' home in Scottsdale, Reese said, dropping it onto the dying man's chest.
He pulled out another photo of a woman pushing a shopping cart in a strip mall outside a Whole Foods.
Your mother.
He dropped it onto Sharam's chest, where it stuck to the sticky vomit. He extracted another of a man getting out of his car in the driveway of the house with the cactus.
Your father, Reese continued. Both will be dead in hours if you do not give me what I want. And I'll make sure to stack their bodies with non-believers. Better yet,
I'll stack them with the Jewish bodies and then burn them together to ensure they spend eternity with you in hell.
Reese,
Haley said. Even through the mask, he could see the horror in her eyes.
Ilah,
Shahram recited. There is no God but Allah. Enjoy your final prayers, asshole. Remember, it won't be me killing your parents, it's you. Reese turned to leave, passing a stunned Dr. Garrett.
Wait.
Reese turned. What was that? He said.
I don't know all of it. Just, please, promise me you will bury me in accordance with Sharia and not harm my mother and father.
That is all up to you, Shahram. Your position in the afterlife and what happens to your parents all depends on what you tell me right now before you leave this world. You can't save yourself in this life, but you can save your mother and father.
They wanted me to build a lab.
A lab? Reese asked. Shahram closed his eyes. Who, Shahram? Your family is depending on you, Reese said, holding up the photo of his mother now stained with blood and vomit.
I don't know. I was just told to build a lab.
A lab? Haley asked, stepping forward. What type of lab?
Virology. That's my specialty.
What kind of equipment? She asked, taking control of the interview.
Electron microscope. Centrifuge culture cabinet. Heat vents. UV exhaust vents.
What for? Haley asked.
For the kidney cells.
Help us help you, Shahram, she said. What kidney cells?
Green monkey. From Africa.
Shahram, this is important. Did you separate them into independent cell lines? And did you introduce a sample?
They had clearly surpassed Reese's infectious disease knowledge. He was now a spectator, as Haley dove into the specifics. Shahram coughed, more blood trickling from his mouth and nose. Reese noticed blood beginning to drip from his ears as Haley pressed on.
Shahram, we need to know,
she said, her voice calm and compassionate.
Think of your parents, Shahram, Reese interjected.
Haley turned and gave him a stare that told him to back off. Shahram closed his eyes again.
Ashhadu an la ilaha illallahu. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullahi.
I bear witness that there is no deity but God, and I bear witness that Muhammad is the messenger of God.
Reese was getting impatient. The constraints of the suit and the claustrophobia of the mask were pushing him closer to the edge. The man before him was responsible for a virus that threatened to ignite a new civil war, and more important to Reese, he was somehow connected to the assassins who had targeted him and Katie in Maryland. Stuck upside down in the overturned Land Cruiser, drawing his pistol, eye picking up the red dot, knees exploding from the impact of the bullets, headshot.
Fucking talk, Shahram! Fucking talk, or I swear to God I will fillet your mom in front of your father before dismembering them both and burning their worthless bodies. Their souls will never find peace. They will haunt you in the afterlife.
I...
Fucking talk!
Haley stared at Reese in disgust, then turned back to the patient.
Just take a breath, Shahram. Think and tell me the nature of the sample that was introduced.
Shahram's bloody eyes drifted from Haley to Reese. His vision blurred from fever and a virus that was liquefying his brain. But through the haze, he studied Reese, seeing not a man but Azrael, the angel of death.
Mar.
His voice trailed off, more blood dripping from his nose.
What?
Haley asked, trying to encourage him.
Marburg.
Haley felt the blood draining from her face.
What type of Marburg?
Variant U. Dear God in heaven, where did you get it?
Gasping for breath, his body shuddered, and he retched a greenish-yellow vomit mixed with tinges of dark blood onto his pillow and chest.
Where did you get it? Rhys shouted, reinserting himself into the interrogation. Was it this man?
Rhys shoved a blurry photo in front of Sharam, a photo he'd taken in Chicago of a figure leaving the house of his first target. Before Sharam could avert his eyes, Rhys saw the recognition.
In the lab, Sharam. Is it in the house you bought in Denver?
Sharam remained silent.
Sharam, Haley said, needing more information. How does it spread? Did you aerosolize it?
He gave a slight nod.
Can it be passed from human to human?
He paused.
Your parents, Sharam, Rhys barked.
I don't know where it came from. How is it spread? Direct bodily fluid contact. Contaminated blood. Is it a respiratory disease? I can't be certain. It was released in aerosolized form. I don't know why.
To cause this,
Rhys said, gesturing to the cots awaiting bodies against the green canvas walls of the tent.
I don't know.
Who knows? This man?
Rhys asked, pointing to the surveillance photo he'd taken in the Windy City.
I don't know. Please.
His voice was getting weaker.
You are a shitty liar, Sharam. Tell me about him. Who is he?
Praise be to Allah. I do not know.
He lied to you, Sharam. Did he tell you that you were part of the team? That you were a warrior of Allah? Is this how a warrior of Allah dies? He killed you, Sharam. He killed you to tie up loose ends. You were always a liability, an expendable asset. This is a man you want to protect?
No,
Sharam murmured without conviction.
Where can I find him? How did you contact him?
I didn't. He came through the mosque. Please.
What mosque?
Please.
The FBI is raiding your house now. We are going to find everything, Sharam.
This is all I know. Alhamdulillah.
Praise be to God. His breath was coming in shorter gasps, eyes rolling back into their blood-filled sockets, red drops of what should have been tears trickling down his face.
Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi,
he whispered. Verily we belong to Allah, and verily to Him do we return. Rhys bowed his head and whispered the istirja before flipping the morphine and vital sign monitor back on and signaling to Haley that it was time to go. They pushed their way through the clear plastic curtains and walked toward the exit, leaving Sharam Pahlavi to die a martyr, wondering if Azrael, the angel of death, would keep his promise. Chapter 48. West Colfax, Denver, Colorado. The key was to make it look just enough like an accident to raise questions. He'd used fire once before on a houseboat in Amsterdam. That had been easier. He had started it in the engine compartment of a small boat moored alongside. This was different. If authorities suspected that the virus was not naturally occurring with an index case in Angola, then a suspicious fire in a house on the outskirts of Aurora belonging to one of the first casualties might prompt some enterprising American detective or intelligence operative to start asking questions. That, or at least it would add fuel to online conspiracy theorists who would muddy the waters enough to cause even the staunchest government supporters to question the official narrative. It would be Angola or homegrown terrorism. Even though the perpetrator was of Middle Eastern descent, he was a U.S. citizen. No nukes would rocket toward Tehran, no U.S. boots would set foot on Persian soil. And America in ruins, a reshuffling of the world order. Ali had already found anti-government conspiracy websites theorizing that the virus was concocted in a U.S. lab, as many believed had been the case with COVID-19 in Wuhan, China, Twitter was ablaze with conjecture from shock jocks and conspiracy theorists speculating that the virus was intentionally released as justification for a federal power grab. Gun confiscation was surely next, followed inevitably by re-education facilities and, for the real troublemakers, concentration and death camps. The Bill of Rights was bound for the dustbin of history. Ali loved the power of a free press. Its power was amplified when everyone had a voice. Theories without a foundation in facts or basis in reality could take flight and go viral. No barriers to entry, no editors, no fact-checking, or if there was, it couldn't be trusted. Fact-checkers had biases and agendas too, after all. The loudest voices dominated the chaos that was social media hysteria, and all of it contributed to the chaos.